everyone doing? I heard so much commotion when I walked in. I thought they were excited to see me, but it was like a mouse or something. So I won't take it personally, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Do you mind if I whenever I speak in places, I wear a jacket. But I just want always a jacket. So
do you mind if I... You're not offended by this, are you?
My name is Rabbi Lawrence Hedgeoff. It's a real pleasure and an honor. I'm on full-time faculty at Stern College for the past 18 years. And if you end up coming to Stern College, which we do, you'll be able to see me hang out. I've got so much to tell you. I just spent the past 2 weeks running a trip of young, unobserved and unaffiliated Jews, which was a real experience. I've done it 25 times. But what I want to do for the time we have together, this is my accent, by the way, it's not New Jersey. Does anyone understand what I'm saying? Yeah? That'd be fantastic. Yeah, it's actually California. That's not And I have a million things to tell you, and it's such a pleasure to be. This is my first talk, and this is why I'll be speaking all the TQJ buses over the next 2 weeks, God willing, till after Tisha B'Av. This is my first one, so I'm still young and sprightly to give over to you. So it's such a pleasure. You know, when I was growing up, I had these old European rabbis, what I'm talking about, who came from Europe and had strong accents, and they were difficult to relate to. And one of them used to say, Hedgeoff, that's my name, and he says, you have no zitzfleisch. Now, I'm Sephardic. I don't know Yiddish. I wasn't married yet, you know. I'm not that Sephardic. So I found out many years later, well, I mean, zitz is to sit, fleisch is flesh. And what he was saying was, Hedgeoff, you can't sit still. You're always moving around. It's true. You know, I was always moving around and running around, you know. Nowadays, they give it titles, don't they? They call it ADD. You know what ADD stands for? Attention Deficit Disorder, which I probably would have been diagnosed with in those days. I believe actually we're in the ADHD generation. You know what that stands for? Attention Deficit. Hey, donuts. That's actually a great joke. In case you didn't realize, hope you can quote me on that one. That was me, and I was running around the whole time. And back then, I took the trouble for it. But you know, the stuff you got the trouble for as a kid is how you make a living later on in life. You know how it works, right? So the kids was like, you know, messing around with computers. You've got the multimillionaires like Microsoft, you know, and Apple, all the rest of it, you know. And the kid was like not listening in Torah class, and he becomes a great rabbi and all the rest of that. So that's what it was like. But it's true, and I thought about this a lot, and I said, you know, there's something to this, you know. What is it with Jews can't sit still? Always moving around, always schlepping, always doing stuff. So when I was in yeshiva, I started to study this idea and started to read a lot of sources on it. And what I found is, my friends, that the Jewish people, as a nation, as an army, can't sit still. We are the moving people. What I want to do, with your permission, if I may, is summarize all of Jewish history in 3 minutes. Can you do that? Can you handle that? You've got to crunch it down. 2018, you've got time. Right? We have social lives. Well, I don't anymore. So, what I want to do is I want to go through all Jewish history, and I want to see there are various themes that have been with us as a nation, as an right through Jewish history. One of them, all of you know, is anti-Semitism. Right? They don't like us, and they want to kill us. Right? As my wife always says, every Jewish holiday is the same thing. They're trying to kill us. We won't listen. Right. But you know what? I don't want to talk about anti-Semitism. It's too depressing, and I don't have a good time. So there's another theme, and that is, I mentioned, we cannot sit still. So let's start at the beginning. And let's go to Gan Eden. Now, in Gan Eden, we had Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve. And they sinned by eating from the forbidden fruit. What was that fruit? Anybody know? What was the fruit in Gan Eden? Shout it out. Wow, wow, wow. Fig. Very good. People know a lot of it. No one says that to me. Esrog is what? Sabra. Who said that? That's a good question. Some Israeli was there. Hello. Eat me. I'm ready. Right. So usually the answer I get is apple. Interestingly, nor in Jewish sources do you see apple. The Christians believe it to be apple. However, it was an esrog. It was wheat. It was grapes. It was fig. I like to think it's fig. And I believe that's why we eat fig on Shoshana, because we have to figure out what to do with our lives. I'll be all right. Okay. Right, and they ate from that fruit. Probably it was fig because they took the leaf of the fig apples and covers us with meat, clothing from it afterwards. And while Adam and Eve eating that forbidden fruit, they were kicked out of Gan Eden. They weren't killed. God didn't assassinate them. And we see Cain kills Hevel. Cain kills Hevel. And what happens to him? He becomes another wanderer. He's told to schlep around. Now there's 10 generations from Adam to Noah. And Noah, of course, was a tzaddik b'dor asav, his generation. And he also had to deal with some really bad people. Hashem decided to save him and his wife and his kids. And what does he do with them? He sets them on a ship, a boat, an ark, a teva. And they got to float around for an entire year with a bunch of animals and refuse. Terrible experience. You know what Hashem could have done, by the way? Hashem could have put him onto the beach in Tel Aviv. Did you know, according to the Gemara, Eretz Yisrael was not affected by the marble, by the flood, because Eretz Yisrael is so kadosh, where we are right now, it didn't even need to be purified by these waters. So what Hashem could have done is put him on the beach, so you hang out here with the animals, and I'll see you in a year's time. Bye! I'm going to kill everybody else. That's not the way it worked. He was made to schlep around. And we jumped 10 years to Avravinu in Ur Kasdim, modern day Iraq. He's doing very, very well. He's got a successful outreach organization, one of the first, most famous ones. By the way, what was he selling at that point, Avram Avinu? He wasn't selling Judaism. There was no Judaism. There was no Yiddish guy yet. He was selling ethical monotheism. And by the way, of all the things that we Jews have sold to the world, besides bagels and other stuff, you know we do bagels, right? Because we're holy people. And they're only going to get worse. I'm just warning you. So you might as well enjoy them when they come. So besides that and wholesale shopping, is we Jews are very good at selling ethical monotheism. That's really the main export. I mean, by the way, ergo, to go with that, is basically putting down idol worship of Avodah Zarah, which was he was dealing with in a big way back then. Really, the Torah he was teaching was Hilchot Avodah Zarah. They said he had a Gemara this thick of all the laws of Avodah Zarah, mostly what not to do, as you can imagine. And he was doing very, very well. He had a Chabad movement, if you will, going through the desert with a camel and a picture of the Rebbe on the side of what he was doing. But he was doing his thing in ceremony, he was doing her thing, and they were changing what Hashem said to him. Time to go. Left Lacha. You got to go? Pretty strange. He's doing very, very well. That was a big journey, by the way. Big journey. Where was Avraham Avinu told to go? Let's see if you know your Judaism. Where was Avraham Avinu told to go? To the land I'm going to? I reckon. I'm going to show you. That's weird. Why didn't you say, we're going to Israel? That rules the ultimate destination. So why did Hashem say, you know what, we're going to leave, and we're going to go to Israel, because we're doing great over here, you're doing much better over there. And by the way, in case you think it was an obvious thing, it wasn't like it is now, turn up at the side of the airport full, with all these families and friends, and there's shawarma and falafel, right, for everyone, you know what I'm saying, buffet trip, woo, right, and Russians, Ethiopia. It wasn't like that at all. Nobody left Ur Kasdim. Crazy Ur Kasdim. And Haran, these were the epicenters of civilization. Eretz Yisrael was a family. So when you turned up to leave, there was no food. It makes sense. It's very strange to think about this. Yeah, because you got Eretz Yisrael. Why? There's nothing there. You had no family waiting for him. I'm going to come back to it a little bit later. Let's keep going. When Avraham had children, he had Yitzhak. Now, we'll leave him alone a little bit because he doesn't travel too much, because after the Akedah, Yitzhak became so kadosh, he couldn't leave. We don't have too much of Yitzhak Avinu, but Yaakov Avinu, oh my goodness, he can't sit still. In Israel, outside, in, out, shake it all about. Right? And he can't stop moving. He's got wine with him. Oh, it doesn't stop. He's schlepping around. He represents Gala, he represents exile. He's out of it so much. And of course, he has the Shvatim who end up in Eretz Yisrael, and then we end up outside, and we go to Mitzrayim. Yosef goes first, remember him, the Technicolor dream coat, the whole thing, right? You saw the movie, read the book, it's also very good. And he ends up in Mitzrayim, and so the Jewish people there as well, the Halloween Mitzrayim 4. Not at once. How long were we in Mitzrayim for? 210 years we're in Mitzrayim. And eventually, it's time to go. There have been two great journeys in Jewish history. This is very careful. There have been two great journeys in Jewish history. The first one is Avraham Avinu lived on the Haran to Eretz Yisrael. The second is the Jewish people, his descendants, with Moshe Rabbeinu leave Mitzrayim. Nobody left Mitzrayim. You know why? Because it was really good Mitzrayim. Even for the Avodim, there's a reason we left and kept saying we want to go back. We weren't crazy. We're all institutionalized. But nobody left Mitzrayim. It's like saying today, you know, I'm an American with my family, and I want to go and go to the land of opportunity. Let's go to Kabul, Afghanistan. No one's doing it. They're going to be crazy. Who does that? That's the equivalent. Let's go into a midbar, low Zeruah, an unfertilized land. What, even its rival food's there? And what did the Jewish people do? They complained there was no food. They kept reminiscing about the great food back in the day. Oh, it was so good. Remember the watermelon, the avatichim, and the shum, the baksal, the garlic, and the onions. But you were a slave. I know, but the food was good. It's hard to believe the Jews complained about food. It's hard to believe that. Just maybe your imaginations accept the fact that maybe we Jews complained about food, you know? And we're in the midbar now. How long are we in the midbar for? 40 years, that's right. How many, this is a tough question, I'll be very impressed with this. If you get this, an extra piece of shawarma, your next 9 towns on me. How many journeys did the Jewish people take in the midbar, in the desert? Not 38, nice try. Shout it out, don't be shy. I have 4 daughters, I have women shouting me all day. 42, very good, what's your name? What school did you go to? She went to public school. Respect over here, embarrassment over there. She went to school for free, and your parents spent tens of thousands of dollars for you not to know the answer to that question. I'm not judging. I didn't know the answer either when I graduated. So don't worry. I'm not judging anyone here. Feels good, right? Okay. 42 journeys. That really happened the same way every time. Listen very carefully. We arrived at the destination with Moshe Rabbeinu, and the clouds stopped, and the Aaron Kodesh went down, they encamped, and everyone said, fine, we're going to be here, right? Found a place in the Midbar, right? 42 journeys. So we're going to put that up. I started packing their stuff. They put their sweaters and the jeans and the shoes, you know, the shoes, right? My daughter's gone to camp. She took 18 pairs of shoes. Is that normal? And she's like, can I just fit one more pair in? I'm like, no. Where are you going to put it in my ears? There we go. And we arrive, we pack all our stuff away, and we're like, oh, we're here to stay. What happens? Time to go. Right? The Aaron lifts up, the Torah always went first. Right? So we follow the Torah physically and metaphorically. We follow the wheel, filed in behind the Torah, and we kept going. Well, we just got here. I just unpacked the luggage. And we got to the next destination, and we unpack all the stuff, and same thing again. Now, but the third time, we're like, nah. I ain't falling for this. I'm not unpacking. I'm just going to wait till we go. Okay, Moshe Rabbeinu, whenever you're ready. We wait for 1 day, 5 days, a month, a year, 5 years, up to 10 years. And we're like, okay, fine. I'm ready to unpack. Unpack. Off we go! That's how it happened. It's not a coincidence. There's a message. Mas avos sim labanim. What they went through in the Midbar is a microcosm, a crystallization of all of Jewish history. You get comfortable, you start to chill out and relax, it's time to go. Why? We'll get there in a second. And so we keep moving, and we get to Eretz Yisrael finally, and we have time to shvach with the judge, time to Shlomo HaMelech, like one of the epicenters. Really, we were talking about the best time in Jewish history. The time of Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, is considered the best time in Jewish history. I'll tell you something for the Gemara, I was not aware of this. You know they didn't accept converts, Gerim, at the time of Shlomo HaMelech? And by the way, you know how much we love converts. That's a big thing for us. Why not? Because it was so good for the Jewish people. We were skeptical, says the Gemara, of their motivations for becoming Jewish. Like, who doesn't want to become Jewish? We're like in charge of the world. With beautiful base of Migdash, staying for hundreds of years. Everything's fantastic. I told Shlomo HaMelech, he built it, obviously. So it was brand new. People would come from far and wide, people, Sheba, all these people. This was the place to be. So we're very skeptical and dubious of your motivations. As opposed to, I don't know, Poland or Germany, 1943, not so many converts. If someone knocks on the rabbi's door, hello, I'm Jewish. Like, it's 1943, the Germans are coming. I want to become a Jew. Like, I think you're serious. You know what I'm saying? That person means it. Not too many converts that I know between 39 and 94. There were some, but not too many. So that was the epicenter. And eventually, basically, it was 200 years, and eventually it was destroyed. Came along Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians destroyed the first temple, and now we're in between, starting the second, the 4 exiles for the Jewish people. My most recent book, actually, talks about the 5th exile. I know when you grew up in school, the yeshiva, there were about 4 exiles, the Dalai Goliath. This is the first one. According to the Kabbalists,
And non-capitalist is potentially a fifth exile, which I believe we're in right now. We're actually past the fourth and then the fifth. That's another discussion for another time I've invited back. And so what happens? The Jewish people are kicked out, and where do we end up? We end up, for the most part, in the epicenter. By the way, you notice this, wherever we go, we don't end up like some like far-off like African nation, middle of nowhere, Australia. We always end up in the biggest, most powerful nation. The Egyptians were the bosses, right? The Babylonians were the bosses. They were always controlled. This is another theme. Now, do we create it that way? Does Hashem systemize it that way? That's the question. Well, you know, it's chicken and egg. Maybe they become those great nations because of us, or maybe that's what Hashem wants us to be. It's a little bit of both, by the way. And so we have a 70-year, this is very heavy, 70-year period between the first and second temple. And that's the whole Purim story, right? There we are, jammed right in between. And the Jewish people, for the most part, are in Persia, after Babylon. Yeah? And actually, we're in the capital of Persia, which was Great Neck. Now... Well, it's not. It's actually Shushan. Which, by the way, still exists. Does anyone know what the modern version of Shushan is? Hamadan. Hamadan. Any Persians here? That's it. You represent? Woo. Represent. Right. So, actually, you can go today to Hamadan. I don't recommend it. Go to Miami first. Right, or is this wrong? And you can actually see the conformity on YouTube. You'll see the Kavarma of Mordechai and Esther buried next to each other. She was probably put next to Ahasuerus and then taken out and put next to Mordechai. And there's actually videos, you see these people going through and visiting the Kavarma of Mordechai and Esther outside this town called Hamadan, so it still exists. And the Persian community in Persia, modern day Iran, would actually go on Erev Purim, some on Purim to visit and pay homage to our ancestors, Mordechai and Esther, for saving our lives. That's the second galut. And then eventually we go back. What percentage of the Jewish people went back to Eretz Yisrael after this galut, of this whole Persian Purim story thing? What percentage do you think? I remember that we were allowed to go back, right? Cyrus says, go back, go build. What percentage went back? Have a guess. To build the second temple. We had permission. You would have thought, everyone, right? Who's not going back? We can go back after all this time. 32-33%, that's about it. Got it? Well done. Feel good? I feel good. So most Jews did not go back. They're like, you know what? It's nice in Babylon. We've got a nice house. We've got all the best of midrashes. Right, we're doing very well. Mordechai's in charge. He's so powerful. Esther's recognized. They wanted to stay, and they stayed elsewhere. By the way, Ethiopian Jewry, while you're here, get into conversation with one Ethiopian Jew. They're so cool. They're so amazing. So when I lead trips, I take them to visit an absorption center. There's a few up in Tzfat and around that area. And you walk in. Can I sound a little bit risque? I'm not too risque. It's actually halachic, but it's very interesting. I walked in to visit these families, bring the groups to see these Ethiopian new. They've just arrived recently. There was a very old Ethiopian man introduced me. I said, I have a group here from New York. He has no idea where New York is, right? And we walk in, and I see him, introduce me to his wife, his lady sitting next, old lady sitting next to him, and then there's his daughter over there, which wasn't his daughter, it was the second wife. Why? Because they existed before the Takana Rabbeinu Gershon. They missed out. And not only that, which forbade having multiple wives, you're not allowed to marry more than one wife today. What's the punishment for marrying more than one wife? More than mother-in-law. Now, when you get older, that joke is so much funny. I'm just telling you right now. It's just like, oh my God, wouldn't she? Yeah. And so not only that, oh, by the way, the Rabbanut had to make a decision. The Rabbanut said, what are we going to do? The Tanya with 2, 3, 4, 5 wives. What are we going to do? See, so we can't make them divorce. They actually allowed them to remain married to them, but they couldn't marry anymore. So there's a lot of Jews walking around, actually Yemenite Jews from the older generation, not anymore, because they came in the 60s. But there's many Ethiopian Jews walking around Eretz Yisrael with more than wife. Wild, right? Because they were not there. Rabbeinu Gershom's Takana did not reach that far. Didn't reach a lot of the Sephardic world, actually. Like Persians and Iraqis as well. But they also didn't have the Purim story. Right? Because Purim happened when we were there, and they probably shifted far away. Some say they went to Chabadan, whatever, you know, they're from that Shevet, so they weren't part of it. So they turned up in Eretz Yisrael, all these Jews, can you imagine that? And they had a lot of the holidays, and they had all the Hilchot Nida and all that, and Shabbat they had, right? And they had a Torah, very cool Torah. And they're like, Purim, what's that? Like, oh my goodness, I tell you what happened. A couple thousand years ago, this whole thing, oh really? And they had to adopt it, become part of the Jewish people. Isn't that interesting? And I don't have a social life, this fascinates me.
And so that's that period over there. We return over, well, 200 years, and Ezra tells us where to put the stuff to build the second base of Mikdash. This is actually not so easy. And one of the jobs of Mashiach, my most recent book is on Mashiach, The End of Days, so I'm getting into this topic. But one of the jobs of Mashiach, one of the main jobs of Mashiach, actually, is going to have to tell us where to put stuff in the base of Mikdash. You can't just like stick it on a mountain. You've got to make sure Mishkan goes over there, like the arrow goes over there. You've got to know exactly where stuff goes. Kiyor goes over there, Menorah goes over there. You need Ruach HaKodesh, and Nevuah, Ezra was able to do it. Right? Mashiach doesn't have to do that. You can't just stick it anywhere. It's got to be Bimkomos as the Rambam in its place. So, sustaining. So we went back and we entered back. So 200 years after that, came along the Greeks. That's the whole Hanukkah story. 200 years after that, we build the. We Romans come in. That's Tishbav coming up. Second base ministry is destroyed. Right. So we have now four Goloses. By the way, listen very carefully. We saw four Goloses, four exiles. But exile is not the right word, is it? Because the first exile was an exile that was Babel. We got kicked out. The second exile was an exile to Paras of Madai. We were not in Eretz Yisrael. The third exile was Yavan, was Greece. That's the Hanukkah story. Where were we for that exile? In Eretz Yisrael. Whoa, how can that be? If you're exiled, it means you're kicked out. So it must be that Galut doesn't literally only mean to remove from the country. It could well be that Galut actually means that you're in the country, but you've been exiled as a person, as a nation. The Shechina has left you. You could be in Eretz Yisrael in Galus, in Galut. It's not a contradiction, it's not a stereo. It's important information. The fourth exile was real exile. We were kicked out physically, emotionally, spiritually. And of course, the Roman exile, then we started to spread out the entire world. Babylon becomes one of the centers. Then we go to Spain, and I have to come through very quickly. We're in Spain until 1492, when Columbus sailed the blue. And he had Jews on board, we know that for sure, because he lived on the 9th of Av, and many Jews were kicked out. But Don Isaac of Barbanel, one of the great commentators on the Torah, probably family of mine, he gets into it. He basically is the account of Ferdinand and Isabella. And they're like, you know, Ferdinand and Isabella, your mum, they were crazy, but they weren't stupid. You're going to kick the Jews out, but you're going to keep your accountants. You know what I'm saying? Someone's going to count money, you know? We still trust you, Jews. And he says, no. If my people are going, I'm with them. And he left on the 9th of Av with his people. And they start to scatter throughout the entire world. By the way, you should know that all of you, whether you know it or not, all of you have ancestors that went through Spain. Spain, remember Babylon and Persia and Mizraim, was the American state. Everyone was in Spain. My wife and I were obsessed with this kind of stuff, by the way, with genealogy. We just did this whole like spitting thing, you know, to get the genetic makeup stuff, you know. My wife got to European Jew, 99.8%. 0.2% Yakut, which is some Mongolian tribe. We don't talk about it, but something happened. Although, actually, some say it's actually the Khuzari, the Khazar is actually from that tribe, which is, we're looking into that. I got Middle Eastern Jew. Funny that, isn't it, right? Almost completely. So, everyone here comes from Spain. So we have a clean lady from Guatemala. We're very, very close to her. And she's been with us for 15 years, like a second mother to my kids. Lovely lady, Magdalena, who has a son called Daniel and Jacob, who lights Friday night candles in a small hidden alcove in her home, because that's what her mother did and her grandmother used to do, and she doesn't know why, and she won't eat pork, and considers Catholicism to be avodah zarah, idol worship. They have too many things up on the wall, she says. Right? You can't walk into a Catholic church. Right? He's up on the wall, she's up there. How much bachas up there? She would not want it to be above that either. It's fascinating. Is she Jewish? Hard to tell, but something's cooking, you know what I'm saying? It's not just the children. Something's going on. One of the things Mashiach's going to have to do, by the way, is to literally, and I'm using this word specifically, because I don't think the Gemara and Yeshua the Navi does, he's going to have to sniff out who's a Jew and who's not a Jew. Literally sniff out. That's going to be one of the tests to make sure he is Mashiach, his ability to smell as a form of prophecy. To know whether a person is Jewish or not. Jewish, Cohen, Levi, Yisrael, or whatever. That's coming, by the way. That's coming. Okay, fine. So everyone here, you all came from Spain somehow. And Poland starts to pick up. How long do I have? You know what time you're over here? Can I handle 5-10 minutes to handle, yeah? Great. And so, everyone here as well pretty much came from Poland. Even if it's Sephardic. Because Poland became big in the 1000s. I led a trip to Poland last year for a large group, and we saw there were tons of Jews who came from Poland. Actually, the Warsaw Cemetery is actually the coolest cemetery to visit. There are 300,000 Jews buried in the Warsaw Cemetery over nearly 100 acres. That's a lot. That's one cemetery in Poland. And so we were all there. Oh, here we go again. You got it? What is it? It's a bug. It's massive. It's the size of a Cadillac. It's just massive. I've been heckled by a lot of people.
You're being paid.
That's why I didn't know. You okay? Polish Jewry builds up, 1945, 39 to 45, the Jews over there, they had the Holocaust, third of Jewish and European Jewry wiped out. The only Sephardim who got attacked and killed during the Holocaust, anybody know? The Greek Jews from Salonika. Some Turkish Jews, the only Sephardim who got it. Others were stuck in the Middle East, right? We have like Syria and Lebanon and Iraq and Iran and all the rest of it. So we see that the Jewish people in 1948, eventually they're kicked out when the state of Israel was set up. And that's where we are today. We now have two major population centers of Jews. And they are where? Where's the largest concentration of Jews today?
Israel.
No, it's not Israel. It's America. America's got more Jews than Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Beth, did you know how many Jews in America? Let's get our stats right. How many Jews in America today? About 6 million. Let's say 6 million Jews in America today, right? Think of New York, think of Florida, think of California, right? They're all over the place. Stuffed with them. Eretz Yisrael is less. They try to say there's more, but there's not. What's next on the list? Anyone know? France. Probably next. Right? Nearly 1 million Jews in France. But they're all leaving, right? Obvious reasons, because they wanted to live. So they're all moving here, selling their house on the Champs-Élysées, right? Buying some place in the town in Tel Aviv. There's nothing for the rest of us. And next after that comes England. How many Jews in Great Britain? England? World Cup, here we go. Yes, anyone know? 30,000 Jews in England, which is like one apartment building in Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? It's unbelievable. And after that, we get Jews from everywhere. I actually hung out in Shabbat, guy comes over to me, and he goes, yeah, I'm from Mauritius. I was like, there's Jews in Mauritius? He goes, not anymore, I'm here. And then, obviously, there's the Israelis who left Eretz Yisrael to come to America, right? How many parents, or how many children are survivors of Israeli parents? Wow. It's a whole production, isn't it? Wow. I can say that because my parents were Israeli. I know what's going on with that thing, right? Right. How many Israelis in America today? So there's actually an article in Yedioth Ahronot, which is one of the big papers. They actually wrote a lot on me and my organization. I did a few trips. There was an article on me. And I spoke to the editor, and she said to me, in America today, officially, 500,000 Israelis in America today. Unofficially, 1 million. You know what that is? That's a lot of Dead Sea cream being sold in the malls. That's what that is. Come, Mrs. Goldberg. I have a lot of Ahava cream for you. I'm like, don't come near me on that. I'm already stay away. But by the way, they make a lot of money on those people, make a mistake. And here we are present day. This, by the way, trust me, I'm a rabbi. We are living in biblical, it's epic. Crazy. My grandmother moved to Eretz Yisrael. My mother was born in Israel. Like, the thought of even going to the Kosar was like alien. Never went there, you know? It was incredible. Just imagine these things that we're like, yeah, let's just go. And I'll say, I've got free evening. It's unbelievable. These are biblical times. We're seeing things unfolding that you can learn over the next, how many weeks are you here for? 2 months? Okay. 6 weeks? You're going to learn things like, this is epic stuff. This is biblical. It's in Tanakh. We are living it today. Things that our grandparents could never have thought of, right? Your grandparents were in the Holocaust, Auschwitz. I've been 5 trips to Poland. They're standing in their pajamas, freezing cold in Auschwitz. Like, no, don't worry. In a few years, you'll have our own country, right? We have a great army. What an air force. Eating shawarma. And your kids are going to go for free. Like, what? It's insane. It is insane. Why? What's going on? Why can't we sit still? Can you see the theme? Right through history, we cannot sit still. We're schlepping around. Why is that? I have a few answers, but I want you to have your own answers. In the next 6 weeks, I want you to think about this question. It's not my question, I'm not that smart. But this is a question. What is it about the Jewish people that we can't sit still? So I'll give you one answer, if I may. Let's go back to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was called to Lech Lecha. What does Lech mean? Go. What does Lecha mean? So see, Rashi says to yourself, your benefit. But others say, you know what it means? To you. Lecha literally means to you. Lecha is to you. I mean, how do you Lech Lecha? How do you go to you? It's ridiculous. I can't travel to me. Actually, you can. We say in the end, you've got to find yourself. You've got to move. And that's what you've done. All of you are learning stuff you can learn back in America, back in New York, back in Colorado. I don't care where you're from, Denver, Miami. But you said, you know what? If I want to grow as a person and I want to do it seriously, I've got to move. I've got to get out of my comfort zone. And that's what life is. And that's Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha is move to you, find yourself. Because you know what? As someone once said, ships are very safe in the harbor. But that's not what they're made for. They're made to travel. And that's what each one of you has taken on for the next 6 weeks. It's an incredible thing. We are people of movement. I want to give you a different answer, which you probably wouldn't have heard in yeshiva or day school or public school. But it's an incredible answer. And it goes like this. Check this out. Where do you always end up? In big, famous, powerful nations. Like Mitzrayim, Babylon, like Rome, Greece. These are the epicenters of life today. Everything we have in the Western world and Eastern world is wrapped up in the, and there's the Jew, right in the middle. It can't be a coincidence. Because we, my friends, whether we like it or not, and many people don't like it, but we're stuck with it, are the Am HaNivchar, says the Navi, the chosen people. Now you can't sit still in one place and be the people who are going to sell ethical monotheism to the entire world. So what does Hashem do? He sticks us in dogs. Because you're going to find that monk, you're going to find that Jew, you're going to have someone who wants to convert. There's someone in China who's got that spark, that neshama, that needs to become part of our nation. You can't sit in one place and do it. You've got to travel and go there. And that's what they say. The Sfasema says this. He says, if we as a nation have our mission, we can't just sit comfortable there as Israel. We've got to travel. So Hashem moves us around. Why? It's the same reason Avraham Avinu lived in a tent. You know, Avraham was very rich. And he could have lived in a house. He had mega bucks. Remember, the Torah keeps telling us how many sheep he has, right? The Lord with him a lot. Why do we have to know that? To know how wealthy he was, and he still chose a tent. And what lived in though? He lived in the Bronze Age or something? He had houses. He knew how to build a house rock upon rock. Why did he choose a tent? Because tents move. They're portable. If I'm influenced the world, I've got to get going. I've got to travel. I can't sit here. So he plonked himself with his wife. And when that mission was done, let's go. I'm doing so well. It's not about, you've got to keep going. By the way, where do we see?
That's a great question.
Where do we see the tent of Avraham Avinu being replicated to this very day? We actually rebuild all of you have seen, without even realizing it maybe, the tent of Avraham Avinu 2018. What is it? Not the sukkah. That's the Anan Kavod. That's the chuppah. That's right. Think about it. What's the chuppah? The chuppah is the future home of this Jewish couple, like that Jewish home of Avraham Avinu, Sarah Maynard. Now, a home doesn't look like that. Who lives in a home with no walls? Avraham did, remember that thing? That was open all four sides to let people in. So we take the tent of Avraham Avinu and we recreate it, and we're like, you're the new couple. I performed over the years 150 weddings at this point. And I always tell them this is just a continuation of movement. Because when we talk Jewish people, we talk of people who move to teach, to create. All of you are doing that right now. Every time I'm sitting still to this crazy guy. No! You came over here and you can go and interact with other Jews. Some are religious, some are religious, some non-Jews. And you represent this idea. When you are ordering that falafel, that tachino, that shawarma, that falafel is great, right? By the way, it's only really good if it breaks through and the oil goes down your hand. If it doesn't, not worth eating it. Because when you're ordering that, you have the ability, because they know you're from. They know. They can sniff it out. Right? I told my students, now you think you don't have to wear a yarmulke? They know you're Jewish. But the nose comes. Right? You have to represent. You've got to spread it. You let someone in. You don't get angry. Right? You talk to people. You see, there's a kid on Birthright. At some point, you're going to come to contact with a kid from Birthright. It's going to happen. There's tens of thousands of them over here. Just lose them. Or her, if you're not having a lump all of that. I have it. Where you from? That's interesting, right? Most of them want to bagel you. You know what bageling is? Right? When they always like say something to let you know that they're Jewish. Do you ever have that? I'm like, I'm in a store and someone picks up a vase, right? Oi, vase, look at the price of this. Oh, my God. Okay, I know you're Jewish already. Come on. Right? But they're reaching out to you and hear from you. So a little bit of Avinu, Sarah Menu. Go out of your comfort zone. Leave the tent or in the heat of the day and go do it. Learn here, but apply it out there. Friends, I have the pleasure and honor of teaching at Stern College for many years. And it's a great source for me. I've had hundreds of students, thousands of students. Now most of them are married now, thank God. They have children, they have doctors, lawyers, they're smarter than me. Probably were smarter when they were with me. But this is the one thing I try to tell them. This is just a training ground. This is where you get the information, where you learn the Torah, to get you out there. Because that fast is life. You've got 6 weeks. Enjoy every second. Crunch it. And do me a favor. Don't fetch. There's always one person who's fetching, right? Everything's fantastic. We're in Israel. No parents. I can do whatever I want. Everything's great. All my friends. Right? I can leave my socks on the ceiling and do whatever I want. You don't do that? All right. Whoop. Coming down. Right? You can do whatever you want. And there's always one person. I don't know. The pressure in the shower is not so good today. What? You live in Gun Eden. Look at that view. Go eat 9 slothals. You're out of your mind. I don't know. Temperature on the water is not like I'm used to back home in Melbourne. Oh my God, get a life! Please! Enjoy it. Get the most out of it. Relate to each other. Talk to people you don't normally talk to. There's always some people like, still a bit nebby. Make that person your friend. Because usually they're cooler than you are. That's what you find out eventually, right? Get the most out of it. If you want to see me again, I'm at Stern College. I'd love to have you. If you want to come by and see the campus, we have representatives here. Ayala Hyman's at the back. You can schmooze with her about coming to Stern College. We'd love to have you. It's a growing school. We have opportunities. We have a lot of kids come from public school now. Actually, what I'm doing here is actually going to every TJJ bus, and talking to the students. A lot of them are coming through. We have a massive Machina program if you're at that level. If not, you can work with those people. You get to give as well as take. Friends, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you all so much. It's been a blessing and success in learning. God bless you.